Greetings to each of you in Jesus' name. Welcome all of you to our service. It's a blessing to be gathered together again. Enjoyed the service thus far, enjoyed the devotional, Pat, that you shared. Thank you for that. What is God's purpose for us, really? What is God's plan? And when people reject God, then they make other assumptions and have to process other fears. But when we believe God has a purpose and God is in control, we don't have to fear to the same excess that others do. And God is still in control. God still has a purpose for each one of us. And so we're glad for that. And we try to learn to walk in that will. Tanya and Twyla, we're rejoicing with them and their decision to accept God's will for their lives and in serving Him. And so we want to give them opportunity now to share their testimony one at a time. So Tanya, if you would go first and then Twyla. Thank you both for sharing, and God bless you as you walk this journey that God has before you, whatever that may entail, and let's continue to lift them up in prayer. You can turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 16 this morning. 1 Corinthians 16, verses 13 to 18. Verse 15 specifically is our text verse where I taken a title from. The title for the message is Addicted to the Ministry of the Saints. Addicted to the Ministry of the Saints. I want to start reading here in 1 Corinthians 16, 13 to 18. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. Let all your things be done with charity. I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints, that ye submit yourselves unto such, and to everyone that helpeth with us, and laboreth. I am glad of the coming of Stephanas, and Fortunatus, and Achaicus, for that which was lacking on your part they have supplied, for they have refreshed my spirit and yours. Therefore acknowledge ye them that are such. Addicted to the ministry of the saints. We usually think of addiction, being addicted to something, as something negative. It's a negative. We talk about people that are addicted to sinful habits, to alcohol, to drugs, to tobacco, to gambling, whatever it is. There's lots of addictions that people are addicted to. And normally it's a negative thing because they're enslaved to that thing that controls their life. Every aspect of their life is focused on that. If people that are addicted to drugs, their entire focus is on getting money so that they can buy the next hit so they can get the next fix, and that is that controls their life. Addictions are unwanted. The drunkard doesn't like to get drunk, but he's addicted to it. He can't help himself. He's powerless to stop. And in this verse, Paul says this family is addicted. This family is intentionally addicted to something. And so it can be a good thing. This word addicted, this is the only place in the Bible where it's translated this way, as addicted. It means to arrange in an orderly manner or to set. And so in other places in the Bible, this Greek word is translated as devoted or as set or as appointed. And so you could say they devoted themselves or they appointed themselves to the ministering of the saints. Webster's, if you look up the word addicted, says strongly inclined to do, use, or indulge in something repeatedly. or to devote time and attention by customary or constant practice. And so this family here, they were strongly inclined, and they were devoting their time and attention to the practice of ministering to the saints. And so who were these addicts? It says it's the house of Stephanas. And we don't know much about the house of Stephanas. We know a few things. One is that they were the first fruits of Achaia. And that is typically understood to mean that they were among the first people that were converted in Achaia, which is what is Greece today. And if we go back to the beginning of 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we have this family mentioned again. And Paul is giving he's talking about his ministry, and he says, I didn't really come to you to do a lot of baptizing. I came to you to preach gospel. And he says, I baptized a few of you. And oh yeah, I baptized the house of Stephanas. In 1 Corinthians 1 verse 16, he says, and I baptized also the household of Stephanas, besides I know not whether I baptized any other. And so that's what we know about this family. He baptized them. They were of the first fruits, and they had an addiction here. They were addicted to serving. And then in verse 17, it says, he mentions that Stephanas and these two others traveled to where Paul was to minister to him. And these two others are typically considered to be two others of his household, whether they were servants or sons, but two others of his household. And so the house of Stephanas, or the household, the word house could be translated household, the household, the family of Stephanas. And so they were known for this addiction. What was their addiction? Well, it was the ministry of the saints. And that word ministry is the word diakonia, which is a form of the word diakonos, which is, you probably make a jump, is the word we get deacon from. And so that word simply means to serve or to minister. But they were specifically focused in this service to the saints. They were serving to meet the needs of their fellow brethren. And it was a voluntary service. He says they addicted themselves. They addicted themselves. No one made them. No outside force compelled them. They took the initiative. They saw needs and they acted on those needs. And so their utmost desire, or we could say their craving, was to minister to the saints. And Paul offers up this house of Stephanas as an example to the Corinthians as he's wrapping up his first letter to them here. And the church at Corinth was plagued with a variety of problems. And we could go back to the beginning of the book and look through. But in chapter 1, verse 11, it says, "For it has been declared unto me of you that there are contentions among you." In chapter 3, verse 3, he says, whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions." In chapter 6, verse 8, he says, you do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren." And so there was a lot of strife and discord in the church at Corinth. In other words, it was a church full of humans. And some of them were self-centered and proud, but this family was addicted to ministry. And in the most problematic circumstances, there's always still some good people. And we don't have the problems that the church of Corinth had. But we're human. And we all have the propensity for selfishness and pride. So are we addicted to serving each other? If we haven't learned to truly minister to each other, we can't minister to those across the street either. And so I want to start out with looking at a few principles about being addicted, and then some practical thoughts related to being addicted to the ministry of the saints. So number one, these observations about being addicted. Number one, it requires an addiction to God. 1 John 3, a few verses there. 1 John chapter 3, verses 14 to 18. "We know that we have passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer, and ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." And so the only way that we can truly serve each other is if we first of all have a converted heart and a vibrant relationship with God. We can only truly minister when we recognize what God has done for us. And then service is the response, is our response to that love and mercy. Number two, it must begin at home. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." Paul Tripp, who was a fairly well-known pastor in bygone years, said that no ministry is more important than the one you do in your living room. And another man, C.T. Studd, said, "The light that shines the farthest will shine the brightest at home." It's easy to get addicted to public ministry, to get so addicted to public ministry that we neglect our spouses and children. So ministry must never come at the expense of faithfulness at home. There's many legitimate service opportunities. There's many things we can do, many good things we can do, but none of them are more important than the responsibility that you chose when you got married and the responsibility of the children that God gave to you, God loaned to you. D.L. Moody is probably a name we recognize. He's famous in the late 1800s, a very well-known evangelist that traveled around the nation and even around the world some, internationally some, preaching to large groups of people, saving or leading multitudes of people to Christ. But his son, William Moody, lamented different times the lack of time he had with his father. He didn't feel like he had much time with his father. He didn't hardly know his father because his father was off doing good. But he neglected his son. And so ministry of the saints must begin at home. Number three, no one is exempted from the call to minister. Brother John or Sister Mary is so much better at ministering to the needs among us than I am, so I'll just mind my own business. I'm so busy taking care of my family, I don't have time to help anyone else. Which I just said, we're supposed to do that, right? When my children are teenagers, then I'll have time, then I can serve. Or when I have more money, or when I get my mortgage paid off, or whatever it is, then I can serve. Or maybe there's nothing that I can do, I'm just a young person. Everyone else is older and wiser than me, I don't have anything to offer. I'm sure you've never made excuses like that, but I have. We feel inferior, we feel incapable. And we all have different callings, we all have different abilities, that's true. But there is something for everyone to do. If we go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 4, "Now there are diversities of gifts, but the same Spirit, and there are differences of administrations, but the same Lord, and there are diversities of operations, but it is the same God which worketh all in all." Verse 8, "For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the spirit of gifts, to another the gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another divers kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. But all these worketh at one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing every man severally as he will. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ." And we could keep reading. The body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, "I'm not the hand, I'm not any good." If the ear says, "Well, I'm not the eye, so I'm not any good." Does it sound familiar? Does that sound like us sometimes? He goes down through. He said, verse 18, "But now hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body as it hath pleased him." Many members, but one body. "And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, much more, those members of the body which seem to be more feeble are necessary." And we could keep reading there. But God made each of us different. Each of us have different talents, different abilities, but we all need each other. And it's when we blend those gifts and those abilities together humbly and willingly that the body can thrive and ministry can happen. Number four, ministry is only possible through God's unlimited resources. 2 Corinthians 9:8, "And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work." We minister out of the blessings that God has given to us. If we focus on what we don't have, we won't be very likely to serve those around us. Number five, it's possible to minister for the wrong reasons. It's possible to minister for the wrong reasons. Matthew 23, 5, Jesus speaking, he says, "All their works they do for to be seen of men." Matthew 6, 1, again, Jesus speaking, "Take heed that you do not your alms before men to be seen of them. Otherwise, ye have no reward of your Father which is in heaven." And so there are those that appear to be addicted to the ministry, to ministry of the saints, but they're really addicted to prize and praise of men. They're merely serving. They're going through the exercises of service for the praise and to boost their own ego. It's not for you or me to judge, though. We don't judge each other or each other's motives. We judge ourselves. Do I only serve when others will know? Do I only serve those who I think will respond appropriately? Or maybe I just pick the big, important opportunities. I can't be bothered with just a cup of cold water. We minister to bless, not to impress. Number six, it's a personal choice. This family here, it says they addicted themselves. Addiction to ministry cannot be legislated. The church can't require you to minister to each other. It has to be a deliberate and a personal choice. And it's a choice of a way of life. It's a choice that's going to affect and regulate all of life, as any addiction does. And number seven, there is a cost. Addiction to ministry will cost you. Obviously, sometimes it costs you time, it costs money, it costs other resources sometimes. But beyond that, sometimes being addicted to ministry requires you to give up something good for something better. You give up something that you'd like to do because you have an opportunity to serve somebody else. Sometimes it causes misunderstandings. Those that we're trying to serve, maybe they feel threatened, or maybe they're too proud to accept help, or people judge our motives wrongly. They assume they know why we're doing what we're doing, and so they judge us falsely. False accusations, hurt feelings. And so there's a cost. Addictions always have a cost. And addicted to service is no different. But it also has a great reward. Now, considering more practical aspects of being addicted, what is the practical outworkings of being addicted to the ministry of the saints? How does this affect us? How should this affect us? What we think of first when we think of ministering to each other is what I'm calling the tangible care. The things that we can do, like making a meal for somebody, whether it's for new mothers or somebody or sickness in the family, you make food for them. Maybe it's helping to clean up after a disaster or accident. Maybe somebody's barn blew over and you help clean it up, or a tree blew over and you help cut it up, whatever it is, helping each other. And I'm thinking specifically in the context of within the brotherhood, we help helping each other. Maybe it's visiting somebody that's in the hospital, inviting others over to your house for a meal, gifts to those that are struggling, whether it's financially or physically, whatever way. Those are tangible cares, ways that we help. And so we look for opportunities to share and help physically. We don't have to wait for a sign-up sheet. We're good at filling out sign-up sheets because it's a tangible thing. It's right there. Oh, I should fill in my name. We feel an obligation. But truly being addicted to the ministry in the tangible aspect is looking for opportunities even when there's not a sign-up sheet, looking for ways that you can bless each other. And maybe we don't do enough of this because we're independent, we're self-sufficient. We really don't have a lot of large needs. We're not needy enough, maybe. Or maybe we're too proud to ask for help, or we're too proud to offer help. But tangible care is an important and a necessary start to ministering to the saints. But Stephanus didn't stop there. He traveled to where Paul was. And travel in those days wasn't an easy task. And he didn't just travel a couple miles down the road either. But he and these two others, they went, and it says they refreshed his spirit. They refreshed Paul's spirit. So what about all the other needs that we have? There's needs aside from tangible cares. What about emotional care? Or what about soul care? That sounds scary, doesn't it? It's a lot easier and safer to put a loaf of bread in somebody's car or to sign up on the sheet or to whatever it is. It's a lot easier. And besides, isn't that what we have ordained ministry for? They're supposed to be doing the soul care, right? Corleen Bean said, "The church should be a place where each individual is experiencing relationships, where they are deeply known and still loved, and they learn how to reciprocate that to other people." And so ministry of the saints must go much deeper than just tangible care. And it's the ministry of each one of us. Nobody's exempted from going deeper than just the tangible care. It's a care for the health of your soul and an acknowledgement that I need your help to be faithful and to grow in my spiritual life. It requires developing deep spiritual friendships, friendships that go much deeper than just the weather and work and what I did this past week. These are the relationships that build brotherhood. These are the relationships that strengthen unity and provide the framework for resolving differences. This is about caring for each other so that we can care for others. And so we have to know each other well enough if we're going to truly care for each other. There's not enough time on a Sunday morning to develop these kinds of relationships. It takes time and effort. How much do we interact outside of church? How much do we cross paths aside from Sunday? It's pretty easy to go all week without seeing another person from church because we don't live together. We don't work together. And so it's very easy to go from Sunday to Sunday without seeing anybody else from church aside from your own family. And I'm not saying these things necessarily because they're wrong or because somehow that I do better than anybody else does. I'm saying these things because I need to improve. I need to grow in this. And they're not necessarily problems, but they're things that we can mature and we can do better in. Do I put forth effort to interact with my brothers or sisters outside of church? And can we really truly provide tangible care if we don't know each other well enough to see needs, much less soul care? So we need to learn to get out of our comfort zones. We need to learn to be vulnerable with each other. Some of us by nature are more content to stay more on the surface. It takes more effort for some than for others to develop the deep, caring friendships and relationships. But we all need to strive to that end. Crises are an accumulation of small issues that aren't taken care of. And small issues aren't taken care of because maybe we're not addicted enough to the ministry of the saints. Because we don't have deep enough relationships, or because we don't care enough to discuss issues or differences. Or maybe because we don't take the time to know each other well enough so that we can understand each other's perspectives. And the time to learn to know each other and to develop these friendships is before the issues arise. Because when the issues arise, it's too late. And they become crises. There's a few very intentional ways that we can do this. We have to be deliberate about looking for opportunities to interact with each other outside of church. Church is an integral part of it, but it's not enough. And this is things like visiting each other in our homes, inviting a few families to the park, going on an outing together, simply looking for ways to interact throughout the week. Maybe it's stopping in at somebody's place of work or stopping in at somebody's house, having lunch together, making yourself vulnerable to each other. Ask for help with a project. Maybe you have a project that you could do yourself, but ask for some help just as a way to interact together. We don't like to be a bother. We don't like to infringe into other people's schedules, but maybe we should be more willing to do that so that we can truly learn to know each other deeply. Interact with those that maybe you aren't the most naturally drawn to. It's easy for us to interact and to develop deeper relationships with people that we click with. But there's true strength in going out of your way to develop a relationship with somebody that you don't click with and learning to understand each other in that respect. There's other more structured ways of doing this that we haven't adopted yet. But I mentioned them here because I think they're valuable and they're things that we should consider. One would be mentoring or discipleship. One-on-one relationships, and this was mentioned a little bit in Sunday school. One-on-one relationships focused on forming Christ in each other. Anyone can be a mentor as long as you're willing to share your life and point someone else to Christ. And so maybe you see a brother or a sister that's struggling. Make yourself vulnerable to them as a mentor. Offer to walk alongside them as a friend. Ask them if they'd like a mentor or whatever term you want to use. Or maybe you're the one struggling. Ask someone you respect to be your mentor. Ask them to spend some time with you. It's a growing opportunity for both the mentor and the mentee. We're all being influenced by someone, and we're all influenced to a greater or lesser extent by media influencers and by online preachers and by all the other feeds that we can plug into. We're being influenced by those things. It's much better to be influenced by someone who knows you and somebody who truly cares about you and somebody that you can develop a relationship with. Another thing is accountability groups. Another way of developing relationships and learning to know and understand each other better. Bible studies, developing friendships while challenging each other in Bible study and in spiritual growth. Those are ways of intentionally learning to know each other. So why did I share this? Because I covet a church of brothers and sisters that are addicted to the ministry of the saints. Brothers and sisters who are intentional about knowing each other and letting others know us, where we all truly and deeply care about each other. And I think we do. We've started the process. We've started the journey. But I think there's more that we can do. There's more that I can do. Can it be said that Jefferson City Mennonite Church is addicted to the ministry of the saints? Could that be our testimony? Let's pray.